Welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. I am joined today by James Murphy. James, how are you?
I'm very good, Brendan. I'm excited to be here to talk about a very exciting time of year.
Yes. It's been an interesting past couple of weeks. I was talking baseball last week, so we're heading back to the hardwood this week. But yeah, a lot's been going on.
Yeah, definitely. We concluded the regular season Egg Bowl. Not to say that these teams have no chance of playing in the SEC tournament, but quite a bit of that. And one of the teams involved might be hitting its stride.
Yes. State's coming off a huge win over Texas A&M last night and beat Ole Miss in the second half of the Egg Bowl, I guess. Over the weekend, so great time to be a Mississippi State fan. It's amazing what a couple weeks can do for a team.
100%, and I think it also goes hand in hand with just having the opportunities to be able to, you know, showcase that and to just have that. Now, I think I saw a metric about how there was they had the 11th hardest schedule in the country, and that gives you a lot. While yes, it's tough, it also gives you plenty of opportunities to not only ensure you get in, but ensure you get a pretty comfortable seating. And they're able to get just enough, which against that schedule, again, can get you into a pretty good place.
Being an SEC team and complaining about the strength of schedule this year, though, is just kind of like the meme of the pointing Spider-Man, but it's all in a circle.
Yeah.
You know? But yes, by KenPom, they've got the 12th hardest schedule in the country. But I mean, like, four, like, the top seven are SEC teams.
Pretty unreal.
So, you know, there's that. And that's really saying something considering that State's non-conference schedule was ranked 140th.
Yeah, you'd kind of have to balance that out almost.
So, yeah, I just wanted to point that out. But yes, I was there Tuesday night covering the A&M game, and I think that is about as big of a win as State's going to get this year. Sweeping the Egg Bowl is all fine and dandy, but I think there's also something about getting a top 10 win at home. I don't know. It feels kind of like splitting hairs trying to figure out which win this year for State is the best one. But there's just something really cool and neat I thought about last night.
Yeah, they got back to their identity, it being toughness and being able to drive to the hoop and be more physical than the other team. And that's not an easy thing to do against a Texas A&M who, if I'm correct, was leading the nation in offensive rebounds and had one of, if not the best defense in the country. You know, very impressive to be able to do that at home against a top 10 team and just finally really get over the, no pun intended, get over the hump. But that was dumb. I apologize. Anyway.
No, I saw it coming.
It was a hanging curveball. Anyway.
You gave me some time to brace for impact.
Yes. Anyway, now that that one's left the yard, obviously really big for them to be able to do that. And I feel like by getting back to their identity, they were able to set up a lot more. You know, Hubbard was able to get more looks. Claudell Harris, he's had a really nice two games. And a cowboy hat? I still haven't heard where that one came from.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look through my notes from last night. But I was certainly a way to start off your media availability is just walk in with a really silly hat.
I mean, if you're just going to pull up from three and make 90% of them, you can go ahead and put whatever you want on your head. But yeah, really good job by him. Good job of them getting back to their roots and really finally getting a big marquee win and stringing together back-to-back quad one wins.
If you guys haven't seen, go check out the photo of Claudell Harris that I posted on Twitter last night at BFarrell77. Shameless plug. Extremely shameless. But yeah, I mean, you kind of mentioned it. It's been a nice few games for Mississippi State players not named Josh Hubbard. Not that he hasn't played well. He's been Josh Hubbard the last couple of games. But he's finally had some help is the big thing.
Yeah, they've gotten a complete effort. I mean, just kind of going back to the Egg Bowl, five players in double digits? really nice complete effort, which was just something they needed, because outside of Hubbard, it felt like, oh, this player would have a good game, but then the other player wouldn't, and then the other player would have a good game, but this player wouldn't, and it would just kind of, you know, things would kind of be up and down scoring-wise with other team, with other players, while Hubbard would probably be the most consistent scorer, and he's getting a little bit more consistent help. And I think that comes back to getting back to the toughness and getting back to being more physical to therefore create more opportunities. They're playing more like who they are, if that makes sense.
They finally are who we thought they were.
Yes, exactly.
The thing about the Egg Bowl game, though, was Hubbard wasn't even their leading scorer in that one. It was RJ Melendez with 17.
Yeah, and look, he and Claudel were two transfer newcomers that were brought in to create more complete efforts for Mississippi State, because even last year, you would have Tolu Smith and Josh Hubbard being the top scorers and Cameron Matthews occasionally, but again, it was tough to get consistent effort all night, and you brought in guys like Claudel, and you brought in guys like RJ and Riley Kugel even, because he had 11 points in the Egg Bowl, to be able to get that going. Also, they haven't been able to score as many points, but I will shout out Sean Jones Jr. and Delquan Warren, who, while they have been in, have been able to do quite a bit in terms of ball movement and just playing pretty good defense on the other end.
Yeah. I thought the game last night against A&M was interesting because it seemed like the one walking in, it's easy for me to say this now, I should really publicize my thoughts more, because then I could do more victory laps and while forgetting about the failures. Kind of going into last night, I kind of figured that they had a chance, because A&M is a weird team profile wise. Like, what do you mean that you're, you know, like a top like 15 team by like, you know, overall by most metrics and rankings, but you can't shoot the ball, right? Like, when I say you can't shoot the ball, I mean they cannot shoot the ball. Everybody can shoot the ball against Mississippi State this year, pretty much. A&M couldn't. And that's been their whole thing this year. They're ranked 297th in the country in effective field goal percentage, which is, you know, like field goal percentage, but weighted for the impact of and value of threes and such, right? 297th in the country, right? They cannot shoot. They don't shoot well from outside. They don't shoot that well from inside. But they make it work because, you know, we mentioned it. They're the number one team in offensive rebounding percentage, right? And they force a lot of turnovers, and they play really good defense. So you've got a shot. Or, you know, that's how they win. And it seemed to me in a lot of ways, that's how Mississippi State found a way to win last night. The second half was just awful for A&M, right? They turned the ball over, I think, 14 times in the second half. I mean, it was just unbelievable. I mean, they were doing, you know, they were turning the ball over in pretty much every imaginable way. You know, they were throwing the ball out of bounds or throwing the ball to a Mississippi State player. I mean, there was, I think there was one moment where, like, State hits a three and A&M goes down the floor, drives to the basket, and State just literally just, like, rips it away and it turns into a bucket at the other end, right? I mean, it was just every possible way they were turning the ball over, or, you know, even when they got opportunities, they were just, you know, hucking up bricks left and right. It was really kind of nuts.
Would you see the kind of defense where Mississippi State was forcing a lot of turnovers? Because I know that when I was down there covering them, that was kind of a point of emphasis. Now, it didn't work nearly as well when I was down there, but I assuming they did stick with the turnover-focused defense, that it worked very well this time around.
Yeah, I don't know if it was intentional or what, because, I mean, I don't think that, like, A&M turns the ball over that much on offense, right? Well, they turn it over a decent amount, but I mean, it was just, I don't know, it was just kind of crazy. I mean, they just couldn't figure it out. I mean, they scored a season low 54 points against State last night, right? If I told you after the Florida game that they were going to get a top 10 win by allowing 54 points, I would not have believed you.
Yeah, but again, I think it's exactly the way that Chris Jans likes it. I think he wants to be able to play those tougher games and to be able to get that going and, you know, just be able to out-rebound, out-physical, out-drive. I think it's what worked against Ole Miss because, you know, as much as Ole Miss was able to stay in the game with just acrobatic gymnastics from Sean Padula from beyond the arc, I do think they got out-toughed a little bit, and I think that's what State wants to do a lot more of, and they were able to do a lot more of it. So just getting back to that, and can we use this opportunity to segue to what Keyshawn Murphy has been able to provide in recent games?
I want to throw out one quick point from the Egg Bowl game, and then I will let you do that.
We'll bookmark it.
Okay. I was just looking at the numbers from the Egg Bowl, and pretty much State and Ole Miss did the same thing. They both shot the ball fine, right? They both didn't really turn the ball over, which is interesting because Ole Miss is very good at not turning the ball over, and they're really good at forcing turnovers as well, right? Turnover margin is kind of part of their path to victory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, turnovers were fairly even. They both got to the line at an astonishingly high rate to the point where I had to fix the axes on the chart, right? The big gap was in rebounding, where State just like wiped the floor with them. I kind of like looking at it from an offensive versus defensive rebounding type of deal instead of lumping it all into one margin. But I mean, State had 14 offensive rebounds that turned into 16 second chance points, right? I mean, they didn't like lap the field in terms of like second chance points, but I just wanted to throw that out there that, I mean, that's been Ole Miss's like kryptonite this year is they cannot rebound the ball off the offensive glass in the slightest. And it killed them.
It did. And it took them out of rhythm just enough to where, you know, as much as the three ball can help you out or take you down, depending on which side of the attack you're on, if you're able to do pretty much everything, if you're able to keep them from doing anything else besides shooting threes, you're going to be in a good spot.
But yeah, I will let you transition into Keyshawn Murphy talk.
Yes, folks, I got a text from Brendan last night with a more or less the question of why is Keyshawn Murphy not starting, to which I, to paraphrase, said I don't know. Folks, I have been saying that Keyshawn Murphy is a matchup nightmare for dating back to last year. He's too big for a guard to cover, and he has a little too much agility for like most centers and forwards to cover. We have seen that unfold over the past couple of games with what he's been able to provide off the bench. Against Ole Miss, 10 points and 8 rebounds. Against Texas A&M, 8 points and 8 rebounds. He's also had 5 blocks and 3 assists in that span. I have been saying that a Keyshawn Murphy that has figured his game out makes this Mississippi State team that much more dangerous. And if he is able to build off of this, because again, these are not his highest point performances. He had, I think, 18 against Alabama. He kept them in that game. If he can keep playing like this, this team can go very far in the SEC tournament and in the NCAA tournament.
Well, I think it's more so, I think I just find it interesting that he's not starting because he still ends up playing like the second most minutes on the team anyway.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, okay, so what, you leave him out the first couple possessions and then throw him? That doesn't make a ton of sense, but we see what he's able to do when he's on. And just also, because like they said on the broadcast for when I was watching highlights for the Egg Bowl, how they were running a lot of the offense through him and just how he was able to make shots go in. Like, he was, like, you know, some of the commentary from the game stood out because, like, even the play by the guys in the booth were just surprised that he was making them, like how he was able to just like trapeze the end line and still be able to get around a defender and get up underneath for a basket or just make like a jumper fading away into the student section and still make that. And you had the guy asking, how did that shot go in? Nobody really knows, by the way. The point is, that's what he's capable of when he's on, just being able to stretch out the defense and be able to create those opportunities with what he's able to do.
Yeah, he had a really nice sort of, I guess, turnaround jumper last night. Sort of, if you're a fan of inside, mid-range, that's the word I was looking for.
Yes.
If you're a fan of mid-range jumpers, you know, the long-lost art of mid-range jumpers.
Oh, don't say that. I know it's true, but it hurts.
Go find the clip of Keyshawn Murphy from last night. Very, very solid. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know. The Egg Bowl... seemed to me it just kind of got decided with that run at the end of the first half there.
Yeah, it did. And they were able to just, again, they figured themselves out, got back to their roots, and were really able to keep it going. And I think that I look at that win and I feel like that was a big confidence booster. I'm not just saying that because they were able to beat their rival on the road. But, I mean, they had Ole Miss fans walking out. That the place was essentially Humphrey Coliseum North for the last 5 minutes. Because it was only state fans in there at that point. Like, I feel like being able to do that on the road and beat your opponent and beat your in-state rival for the second time this year gave them quite a bit of confidence heading into Texas A&M. And I'm interested to see if/how they're able to keep that going the rest of the way.
Yeah, and it was 13-2 run heading into halftime, and just almost never really got back in it after that. But, I don't know. Is there anything else that you wanted to add real quick?
Well, I mean, just looking ahead, they do have a pretty interesting stretch before, in my opinion, the schedule softens up considerably by SEC standards. They go on the road to Oklahoma, and then they go on the road to Alabama. Oklahoma, I believe, is somewhere around the bubble, Alabama being the fourth best team in the country. Still, I believe, capable of making the Final Four despite recent results. Then they host LSU, host Texas, and then go on take a relatively decent road trip to Arkansas, which might be fine, which looks a lot better than it did earlier. But again, by SEC standards, the schedule lightens up considerably. But being able to go on the road to Oklahoma and Alabama and come away from it 1-1, or at least play well during that stretch, will be pretty big for state.
Yeah. I was just looking at like the sort of Bart Torvik rankings, and state not having to play or state only having to play one top 30 team the rest of the way, at least as it currently stands. Not bad as far as the gauntlet goes this year. This is what I wanted to add. Here's the stat I kind of figured out was heading into last night, I believe state had 4 quad one wins. In the previous, after the first three, like the following game after the first three, were all losses, which I believe they were all to quad one opponents, right? That's just the way the schedule is broken out this year. So last night was the first time that they had finally gotten back-to-back wins after a big win, right? So, you know, because State's kind of been doing the... it's so over versus we're so back thing for like 2 months now.
Yeah, they have been going on the opposite side of the pendulum since the turn of the new year.
Right. They haven't, I mean, even before last night, they hadn't won back-to-back games since South Carolina and Vanderbilt. And nobody, you know, that was the start. They started SEC play 2-0, and they've been riding the we're so back, it's so over roller coaster since then.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until very recently.
Yeah. So not only is it finally, hey, we got a big win, and then there wasn't immediate disappointment. It was, hey, we got a big win, and then, hey, we got another big win at home. You know, I think that was, to me, that was the big thing for last night, was finally they got some consistency, right? It was no longer the only consistent thing for them was inconsistency, right?
Right.
And frankly, you know, you look at it, 16-point final, you know, like some of these other big wins are not even big. Some of these other wins, man, you know, Georgia by one, South Carolina in overtime, Ole Miss in overtime, right? Back-to-back games where you really feel like they were the better team, like fairly comfortably.
Yeah, definitely able to really assert themselves and again build confidence. You know, you run your arch rivals fans out of their own building, quite literally, and able to get a win against a Texas A&M team who I know this is the SEC. I know they could very well send most like what 12, 13 teams to the tournament, but even they are one of the best teams in the country and do some things better than anybody else in the country. But it's big, and get that one on the road, get that one at home. It will be tough going on the road and being able to get it. Oklahoma will not be a cakewalk. Obviously, Alabama won't. Going to be interesting to see how they go from here, where they go from here.
Yeah, I think ideally you want at least three out of Oklahoma, Alabama, LSU, Texas, Arkansas. I think three is sort of the good number there.
It is. I think if your state, you think you're capable of getting four, but because two of them are at home, and you know, as tough as going on the road is, Oklahoma and Arkansas are certainly winnable.
Yeah, I just think that just with the way the SEC has been this year, take care of business at home and pray you can get stuff on the road. That's my motto for soccer as well.
Yeah, also makes sense. They do have probably enough quad one wins now to be in a pretty good spot when the postseason starts.
Yeah, in a similar vein, I think you know, the schedule is also fairly, I don't know, I shouldn't say that. The schedule for Ole Miss gets interesting because it's at Vanderbilt, at Auburn, home against Oklahoma and Tennessee, and then at Florida, right? And ideally, you'd get one of Auburn, Tennessee, Florida while winning Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. But Auburn and Florida on the road is brutal.
Yeah, no, especially because it looks like Auburn is arguably the best team in the country right now, especially with how they outplayed Bama for most of the game on Saturday on the road with Jahni Broome working on about 1 3/4 healthy ankles. But again, you probably have to get it's kind of like where State was heading into yesterday, where if you get enough quad one wins, then you can head into the postseason feeling pretty comfortable. Ole Miss still needs, I think, one of those in order to really lock it down.
I think after the win over Kentucky, I think they're fine. They've got wins over both Kentucky and Alabama. You know, like, I think that's fine enough. But yeah, I mean, certainly another, I mean, nobody says, hey, we've had enough wins, we're fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I would say that both teams are in the tournament right now, barring an absolute collapse and then an over in the SEC tournament. Once again, look through Bracket Matrix, which is a lovely website where that basically just like aggregates a bunch of the brackets and tells you where like roughly everybody kind of ranks. And anyway, State and Ole Miss are currently like consensus tournament teams.
Yeah, definitely a step forward for both of them, who I know State was on the bubble for most of the year until they were able to move off of it and comfortably into tournament seating with later in the year. Whereas, you know, with a couple of days left to spare before March, both teams are definitely shows that regardless of how it ends, this season has been a step forward for both Ole Miss and State.
Yeah, I think so. I think State, I think in order for you to say that it was like comfortably a step forward, I would say they would have to win a tournament game personally. Though I guess they might have a better seeding than last year. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. But I still think that's kind of like the big goal. I think people would still be fairly disappointed with that tournament win, which gets me to my next point. I was looking through Joe Lunardi's like most recent bracket, and the matchups for both State and Ole Miss are not fun.
Okay.
On the one hand, you get Ole Miss as a sixth seed in Milwaukee against UC San Diego, who is a very spooky Big West matchup. By the way, I am rooting for a two-bid Big West this year.
Two-bid Big West?
Yes. Yes. UC San Diego, who's ranked 40th in KenPom. You also get UC Irvine, who's 67th. Really want to get both of those teams in there. Both because I think two-bid Big West is really funny. But also, if you get both of those teams in there, you would get UC San Diego, who is the Tritons, and UC Irvine, who's the Anteaters.
Is that just a whole conference of UC schools?
Mostly. It's mostly UC schools, plus CSUN, Hawaii, and Long Beach State.
Hawaii? Aren't they in the Mountain West?
And non-basketball.
Oh, all right. Well, that's the first I'm hearing of that.
Anyway, that's the minor thing I'm rooting for is two-bid Big West. But yeah, so on the one hand, you've got Ole Miss against the Tritons as in the 6-11, which is not super fun. That's not a fun draw as a 6-11. And then on the other hand, you have Mississippi State as a 7th seed against Nebraska in Wichita.
As first of all, hey guys, former Nebraska resident here. A Nebraska men's college basketball game in Wichita is pretty much a Nebraska home game. If that situation comes to life, State fans will have to travel well to balance things out. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I looked it up. It's like a 4-hour drive from Lincoln to Wichita, but I kind of realized that Nebraska fans are just like all over the like greater plains.
Yeah, it's like there are just certain teams in that area, college and professional, where it's not just like concentrated in one area, but it's spread out over like several cities. Also, if it's a Nebraska men's basketball game, they're gonna travel regardless.
Yeah, that's the one thing I have learned about the Nebraska fan base is that, A, it's way bigger than you think it is, because you're like, oh, it's Nebraska, it's some tiny little, like, flyover state. No. And B, they will travel. If the team's good, they will travel.
They could play in Edmonton. They're going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what, didn't they, like, continuously sell out during the, you know, gestures in the last 15 years of Nebraska football?
Yes, I believe that streak is still going. Some people call the legitimacy into question. I do not, but yes, the sellout streak has been going on for a while.
Yeah, I was just thinking, State hasn't won a game that you've covered, right?
Men's or women's?
Men's.
Men's? No, I don't think they have.
I was just bringing that up because I remember you also saying that you were there for Scott Frost's last game as a Nebraska head coach.
So. I still have the ticket stub.
Unbelievable.
Also, if it means anything, I will be there for the Texas game. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I will be at the hump quite a bit over the next like week. So keep your eyes peeled on my Twitter for that stuff, for sure. But yeah, that's what I had. I just thought that was interesting from a bracket perspective. Obviously, a lot's going to change between now and Selection Sunday, but I just saw those and I was like, oh, that's not fun for either of them.
Yeah, it'd be interesting hypothetical. I mean, no 6-11 matchup is a gimme, but yeah, those would be tough matchups for both of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, yeah, I don't know. Was there anything else that you wanted to add?
That's all the big stuff.
Cool. You can follow James on Twitter at JS Murphy Media. You can follow me on Twitter at BFerrell727. You can find all of our Ole Miss and Mississippi State sports coverage at DJournal.com and at DJournal Sports on Twitter. James, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and have a good one.